Long ago, before the desert, when my mother and I first arrived in Island City, we moved to a tower called the Morningside, where my aunt had already been serving as superintendent for about 10 years. The Morningside had been the jewel of an upper city neighborhood called Battle Hill for more than a century. Save for the descendants of a handful of its original residents, however, the tower was, and looked, deserted. It reared above the park and the surrounding townhomes, with just a few lighted windows skittering up its black edifice like notes of an unfinished song. Here and there brightness all the way to the 33rd floor, where Bessie Duraz's penthouse windows blazed, day and night, in all directions. By the time we arrived, most people, especially those for whom such towers were intended, had fled the privation and the rot and the rising tide and gone upriver to scattered little freshwater townships. Those holding fast in the city belonged to one of two groups. People like my aunt and my mother and me, refuge seekers recruited from abroad by the federal repopulation program to move in and sway the balance against total urban abandonment, or the stalwart handful of locals hanging on in their shrinking neighborhoods, convinced that once the right person was voted into the mayor's office and the tide pumps got working again, things would at least go back to the way they had always been. The Morningside had changed hands a number of times and was then in the care of a man named Popovich. He was from back home in the old country, which was how my aunt had come to work for him. Anna was our only living relative, or so I assumed, because she was the only one my mother ever talked about, the one in whose direction we were always moving as we ticked around the world. As a result, she had come to occupy valuable real estate in my imagination. This was helped by the fact that my mother, who never volunteered intelligence of any kind, had given me very little from which to assemble my mental prototype of her. There were no pictures of Anna. No stories. I wasn't even sure if she was my mother's aunt or mine, or just a sort of general aunt, related by blood to nobody. The only time I'd spoken to her, when we called from Paraíso to share the good news that our repopulation papers had finally come through, my mother had waited until the line began to ring before whispering, "Remember, her wife just died, so don't forget to mention Beanie," before thrusting the receiver into my hand. I'd never even heard of the wife, this Beanie person, until that very moment. For 8 long years, I'd been conjuring Anna out of nothing, and I'd come up with a version of her that really suited me. A tall, flowing, vulpine sort of person, generous and chuckling and mantled in benevolence. Imagine my disappointment when she turned out to be short, loud, and incredibly ill-practiced at speaking to 11-year-old nieces. "My God, Sylvia," was the first thing she said to me face to face, standing out there by the Morningside gate with her camera while my mother and I dragged our suitcases up the hill. "Are we going to have enough rations for you?" It was impossible to tell whether she felt I should have more or less than I was already getting. Something about her tone implied that she might be able to secure a grander breakfast than I was used to, the kind I'd only ever read about, pastries and jam. Maybe even eggs. But of course, Island City was adhering to its own version of posterity measures, and breakfast here was a roll of the dice, just as it was in every other place we'd ever lived. Sometimes it was government tea and canned mush. Sometimes a loaf of bread and a suspect egg to share between 2 or 3 or 4 people.